Welcome to QualityCast North, a podcast dedicated to showcasing healthcare quality improvement across northern British Columbia. Casting today from the traditional territories of the Kleklaytonay and Tsintsiyan First Nations are your hosts, Dr. Sher Chewy and Lee Cameron. You're listening to QualityCast North. We're your hosts. I'm Sher Chewy.
And I'm Lee Cameron.
So for this week, first, an apology. I have to apologize for not introducing two new members of our podcast team this season. Now, some of you might remember that Deanna Danskin, our previous co-host and producer, left at the end of season three. And so we have a new co-host and producer this season, who is Lee Cameron. So we welcome you, Lee. And we also have a new member of the team, who's Levi Giles, our program coordinator, and she'll be offering technical support. And now on to the rest of the episode. This week, we're talking about patients, but not in the traditional sense of someone who is simply receiving care, but from the perspective of influencing the quality of care provided by healthcare organizations as patient partners. Here to talk about the why and how of engaging patient partners in healthcare quality improvement is our guest today, Northern Health's Physician Quality Improvement Patient Advisor, Kim Eggers. Hello, Kim. So glad you could join us today.
Good to be here. Good to see everybody.
So before we get into it, Kim, I wonder whether you could tell us just at the beginning a little bit about your background. Where and how in your life did this interest in patient advocacy originally come from?
Well, about a decade ago, I started to have some health issues that popped up. And thus, I had to interact, of course, with the healthcare system a bit more than, you know, what I was used to. Unfortunately, I found that I kept falling into the cracks, if you will, of healthcare, little gaps. And eventually, I found a large crevice, and I unwittingly basically fell into that to the point where I almost lost my life in that case. So, you know, of course, you know, stuff like that happens for anybody. And you do start to lose some faith in the healthcare system. So right about then, serendipity stepped in, as she sometimes does, thank goodness. And I had just subscribed to a virtual newsletter local to Prince George that would list all the local engagement opportunities. And something that caught my eye, and I'd never heard of it before, was Patient Voices Network, or PVN as we like to call it. And so I read about that, and what it was is a group based out of, initially it was started by BC Ministry of Health, and then BC Patient Safety Quality Council helped run it, which is, of course, as we know now, is Health Quality BC. And what they wanted to do is source people from the communities and get them to help co-create solutions to healthcare issues within the system. So with my background, I was very lucky. My parents, my entire life, were volunteers. They just automatically would roll into that. And anywhere we lived my entire life, and to the day almost mom passed away, and my dad's 86 now, and he still volunteers. He probably will to the day that he dies. They were such lovely examples of, okay, there's a problem here or somebody needs help. What can I do? So I think that's just in my genes, to be honest, with such amazing examples. And I wish more people had that example, of course. So I signed up as a patient partner right away, took the orientation, got a good background on it from my engagement leader with PVN, and I started right away to apply for engagements to hopefully ensure that other people didn't have to go through some of these issues that I had. You know, of course, I'm understanding it's a large system. We all know that. But, you know, the feeling is, and certainly QI here with Northern Health, PQI, that's what they're doing. Bit by bit, brick by brick, they're working with physicians to improve healthcare in the North. So I'm all on board for that. I'm a huge fan, right? So, and the other thing I think that really played into it is that since I was a kid, and again, I think I was just born that way. I think both my parents were that way, so I can't really take any credit for that. I mean, I hope part of it is just me, of course, but since I was a kid, I just naturally tended to fall into the role of advocating for others. You know, whether it was the school, the playground, if somebody was getting bullied, I would stand by them, or they more likely would come and stand by me. I was very shy then. They knew they had one person that wouldn't bully them, wouldn't pick on them, and they could go, they'd come along, they'd stand by me, and I was their ally in that moment. I've always advocated for people. It's what really fills my cup, if you will. So in this way, I'm not necessarily directly advocating for others, but I'm trying to help ensure that other patients and what have you don't have to go through some of the things that I went through. Let's try to change the paradigm. Let's change the process and make it better. And again, it's not always a huge, like, whoa, we're doing a huge thing and changing everything. Wouldn't everybody love that? But brick by brick, as the QI program here focuses on, quite often changes in society, we know that's how it starts. It's not always a huge explosion of change. So I feel very fortunate to work with Northern Health PQI.
That's an interesting story, Kim. And it's actually one that we hear quite a lot about patients whose experience of healthcare has fallen through the gaps. And what's different is that you've actually started to do something about that and turn it around to the positive. So it's great to hear how you've it'll be great to hear how you've been doing that. And in fact, I'm going to ask you now, your current role as healthcare quality improvement patient advisor, what is that role, and what does it involve?
About 6 months ago, Northern Health PQI coach reached out to me and actually offered me the position of being the patient partner advisor with the group. Honestly, I was a little taken aback, but I'd worked with her and various other individuals from the group over the years. So we knew each other a little bit. And basically, what I've been doing is trying to ensure that everybody that works with Northern Health PQI understands how and why they should source patient partners for their physician-led projects. I was actually part of a physician-led project about 4 years ago with this group, with Dr. Anthony Costa, and I believe it was on the MSK imaging process, and he brought me in as a patient partner. I also at that time took the VALS training, which this group offers and is really key to QI improvement. And then I recently took it a second time. So it's really helped inform me going forward. What I do is I attend the weekly staff meeting on Tuesday mornings. We discuss everything, requests, and so forth. Everybody there has been excellent about being inclusive, soliciting my opinion. Whether it's on patient partner things or otherwise, it's just a really good group that works well together, listens to each other, and supports each other. So, in the meantime, on my own, I write documents that we will be using to help shepherd people that want to source a patient partner for their group. I've worked on creating in-depth interview questions for potential patient partners working with the group in the future. Patient Voices Network, they're the group that I've been with for 9 years. They have excellent orientation and so forth. But for this group, I wanted to really drill down and make sure that it really met the physician's needs, if you will, going forward, and made it much more specific to this group. So we've also created an orientation module and other types of documents that really will help this group going forward. So, in fact, Lee and I are going to be trialing the orientation soon with another very experienced patient partner. And then she can sort of help us in case we've kind of missed something, or she just has a lot of wisdom to share. So, I'm sure if there's anything missing or it could be improved, she can point that out. So I've been doing a lot of that, a lot of writing of documents that will be put on either the site or maybe Google Drive. And we will let the physicians know going forward when those resources are there and how to use them. And of course, the physicians can always reach out to myself or the PQI coaches. And again, we can always facilitate that process.
That's wonderful. And it sounds like there's some potential applications there for our podcast. So that's thank you for mentioning those.
So, Kim, why should physicians and project leads start by engaging patients and patient partners directly within their QI initiatives and projects? And what perspectives can they bring?
One of the things I don't know if every healthcare professional knows within every group, of course, quite often, if you can include a patient or patients and their families, or a community member or patient partner or more than one, this can actually act as a shortcut. I feel I've seen it happen more than once. It's a really good shortcut instead of spending months and months as, healthcare clinicians and so forth that really truly do care and they really do truly want to improve healthcare for everybody. Sometimes just reaching out to these groups or individuals and getting them involved, even if it's just for quick feedback, even if it's just on a small issue that one could turn around fairly quickly with an improvement, it's a shortcut. It's sort of cliff notes, if you will. So I think that's important. I think sometimes healthcare professionals don't realize that. So they'll sit in the room and they're trying their best to figure out everything. But they're always going to have more of a clinician's point of view, of course. That's what they're trained for. The other one I wanted to bring up today, though, is even myself, and I, like I said, I've been doing this for 9 years. I've been with many, many groups and done many different things. I've even sat there and I've even known some patient partners sitting at the same table with me with a group. And I've been surprised and taken aback myself because I think, oh, I really know these people and so forth. They actually do come up with some really neat, innovative ideas or solutions for things like that I wouldn't have thought. And that's another reason to have more than one patient partner if possible. I'm not going to have all the ideas. I may not have any ideas sometimes, depending on what I've lived or not lived. And so I would really encourage healthcare professionals to remember that they can be very innovative. For them, it's real life, it's what they've lived, or it's what the families have lived. And just talk to them, have them included, and you'll be taken aback for sure.
It almost seems obvious that we would want to involve patients in improving healthcare, but why haven't we historically?
One should always talk directly with the individuals and people or groups that will be most affected by a change. That does seem obvious. And, again, I'm sure I should have done that sometimes with a spouse or whatever. And I forget sometimes. So that's human nature sometimes. We forget. And even in a consumer type, business type of setting, the best businesses, the ones that do the best, especially in this day and age with social media and everything else, they're always gaining feedback, always. So that they can improve, because there's so much competition, of course, there. And the best companies or the biggest companies, they're not always the best companies, in my opinion. That's what they're doing constantly, and they're shifting and they're evolving. So I think, yes, absolutely.
In keeping with that, can you give us an example of a person or institution that does patient engagement well? And what does it look like?
The first one that I would definitely highlight that I mentioned before is the BC Emergency Medicine Network. And this was a network created by a number of professors and the head of UBC's Department of Emergency Medicine. And why they did that, they had a real heart and a real concern for every single physician that had to practice medicine in our BC ERs. And they wanted to make sure that for real, these individuals were supported. So there was online resources, clinical resources. Some of the leaders of that group also helped create real-time virtual helplines for physicians, like Heidi and a number of other ones like that. So they had a real heart for that, but from day one, they wanted to include patient partners. So they had myself and one other join them. One of the reasons they were amazing is they were so transparent. Again, no walls were up, no siloing. They treated us like part of the team, day one. Another group that I worked with, and I continue to, in fact, next week, I start working with them for a third year, is BCIT's Health and Sciences Program. So they have a great leader there. Our chair is awesome. She's trying to get us involved with those programs at any level that we can. So far, last couple of years, we've just been writing documents to sort of help guide that process. That's very important, especially, you know, a learning institution, if you will. We're already co-facilitating some workshops and so forth. It's a real authentic experience. They're always checking with us. Should we do this? Can we do that? We just combine all our wisdom. And they're also really trying to transition into a more inclusive kind of teaching model that's not quite as westernized. They realize that it's extremely important to consider other cultures, and they're putting their money where their mouth is. So we also have those discussions, of course.
Can you tell us in what practical ways can patients and patient partners actually get involved in healthcare quality improvement?
You know, it can start really simple. Like for me, it was a real journey, and I'm sure it was, and I know a number of other very experienced patient partners, some of them longer than me, 11, 12, 15 years. Like really, I'll never catch up with them. They've been doing this so long. And for me, though, it started out, you know, I would get these virtual newsletters from Patient Voices Network because I signed up with them as a patient partner. And I could just fill out a survey. It's like any survey any of us fill out. So it wasn't intimidating. You didn't have to have a great deal of knowledge of the system or what have you. So that's how I started out. Things as simple as that. A lot more people could do that. I wish the newsletter online got out to more people, because you don't even have to be a Patient Voices Network patient partner to do that kind of thing, of course. They can do things anywhere from vetting healthcare forms. Maybe they're going to change a form. I was involved with a group like that years ago.
So that's really interesting. And I just wonder if, let's say I'm a patient and I'm listening to this podcast, and I'm, because you're putting a good plug in here for the service, Kim. If I'm listening and I'm interested in becoming a patient partner, are there specific requirements for them? And are you looking for particular types of people to do this type of work?
Like I said, everything I've done just about has segued through Patient Voices Network. Although with this group, as well as other groups now, more and more people are just reaching out directly to me. I'm not answering an engagement request through the Patient Voices Network. And that's more than fine as well. But Patient Voices Network, I can certainly speak for them to some degree. They certainly are really, really drilling down on having as diverse a sampling of the population as possible. So that's great. We've got to hear everybody's voice, but they're looking for people that are really committed. You want, if you're only going to do short-term things, that's fine. You know, fill out a survey, stuff like that. But you need to be committed. You need to be there for the long haul. If you commit to a year-long engagement, because usually that'll be in the engagement request in those online newsletters, be committed, be there, you know, short of being ill or something like that. You know, I treat it like a job. This is important work. It's equally as important as what all the clinicians and healthcare support people are doing. So that's how I treat it. Be committed. And of course, they're asked to sign, what do they call it? Well, they definitely sign a confidentiality clause, and that's within the code of conduct. So it's laid out what your code of conduct will be going forward with every single group. You also have to agree to keep everything confidential, and they also have a process in place if they feel a patient partner is not doing that.
If they're still interested at this point, how can they sign up? And can you explain what the onboarding process might involve?
They can just go to patientvoicesbc.ca, and they've redone the whole site in the last year or two, so it's extremely user-friendly. Whether you're looking to sign up as a patient partner, or you're a clinician or a healthcare professional and you're looking for a patient partner, or the third one is if you're a researcher now. So you go to the site, boom, there's tiles there, first page. It delineates between those. You click on it, and then if you want to become a patient partner, for example, there's just a nice quick series of questions to answer. Very linear, very easy to follow. Like I said, you have to sign the code of conduct. That's very laid out. But even for the for groups that are looking for a patient partner, they also have to basically agree to treat the patient partners a certain way. They have to read and sign and agree to something as well. So it's very easy. If there's any confusion whatsoever, they have phone numbers. You can always phone a patient engagement leader, and they'll certainly get back to you. They're always looking for new volunteers.
Commonly cited reasons from project leads for not involving patients is that they either don't know how to find a suitable patient partner, or that it takes too much time and could risk delaying the project start. Is there an easier or quicker way to find a patient partner interested in supporting a project? What do you think, Kim? Like you've mentioned other ways that patient partners can become involved.
Well, I really do feel that's a good question, because that is a really, really legitimate question. You don't want to have to put off a project or initiative because everybody's scrambling to find a patient partner. And of course, my role as an advisor with this group is we're going to hopefully really drill down on that and make sure that never happens. We'll do our best. But as I just mentioned with Patient Voices Network, that's really tends to be the group I would recommend that most groups go through, because they have such a definite process. And they, as I said, if there's ever an issue, you can call somebody. You know, if you can't resolve an issue with a patient partner, whatever, even if it's just something very minor, you can get a hold of somebody. There's somebody at the other end of the line, and it can be dealt with in fairly quick order. I feel with their new process, the way they've redone the site and everything, that if I was a physician, I'd go there again. First page, there's a tile that says, I'm looking for a patient partner. Really straightforward, gets you right to the next page you need to be. It literally on one page delineates exactly what steps have to be taken. It also has all the main resources right there. Live links, hyperlinks. You don't have to sort of circle around like you used to have to on that site, really. So I do recommend that. But if they want to reach out to a community group, or maybe even a patient or patients and families that they work with, they can certainly go that way. You know, I think inherently there could be more issues there, but it's done, and it quite often works out really well. And in the Special Services Committee created a really quick primer, if you will, for physicians called Meaningful Patient Partner Engagement, a Guide for Projects and Committees. And on page 16, I double checked because I don't have a perfect memory. On page 16, if they're going to go that route, I would recommend they read that page. It lays out some, you know, maybe pitfalls, ideas, you know, the pros, the cons, and gives them some guidance on that. So they can do whatever they want, you know, but maybe just check some of the resources out.
Thanks, Kim. And just in reference to that SSC, working authentic guide to working with patient partners, yeah, they had the majority of the working group were provincial patient partners. So what a great way to show that co-design.
I love it, Lee, because I always try to read all the resources, not just for myself as a patient partner, but the other side of the coin, the healthcare professionals. You know, again, you're going to be a better patient partner if you understand more than just your little narrow spectrum of something. And I love that. If I could, I'd walk around and hand out this thing because, like I said, I always felt that we should always consider, especially nowadays, how busy clinicians are. They don't have time to read a tome of a book or a document to do anything, really. So we don't want to do that to them. And this guide, quick, easy, double-spaced, easy to read. I think doctors are probably really fast readers because they have to do so much in a day.
So in your role, Kim, you're heavily involved in both raising awareness for the need for patient partners, as well as improving ways to facilitate the type of collaboration we've been discussing. Do you have a personal vision of what patient engagement could look like in the health organizations of the future?
So more and more as the years have gone on, as PBN and healthcare groups have evolved when it comes to working together, more and more we're being asked to help guide the process and add at a systemic level, at a strategic level. That's more what I am comfortable with. I can share healthcare experiences sometimes, but let's be honest, we're trying to really start shifting things. And I'm fortunate because I've been doing it long enough that I choose to only use my valuable time, all our time is valuable, obviously, to work with groups like this that are trying to make actual changes, significant changes, and they're always open to themselves being innovative or their partners being innovative. Like, we know we can't change it overnight. It's a big system, but those are the only groups I'm working with going forward because, and I consider it a privilege, frankly, because all the band-aids that we've been applying for years and years and years, we see it's not really working. So more and more, they're encouraging people to be available to help with sort of that strategic level as well, if that's what they're comfortable with. There's all kinds of people volunteering to do this. So there's all kinds of, they'll be a patient partner for whatever group in whatever capacity. I do feel more and more what I'm seeing is patient partners being put in co-leadership positions. And I think that'll just continue on. You see a lot more patient partners that speak at conferences. It's just going to go higher and higher and we will be helping make more and more decisions because this is our healthcare and it's all of our healthcare. It's your healthcare, Shear. It's your healthcare, Lee. This is our healthcare. We all take it very seriously, obviously. So I think there's going to be a lot more actually speaking with, listening to, and working with the patient partners.
Wow, you've definitely given us a lot to think about there and to mull over, and that's wonderful. Thank you. And we're definitely going to make sure that we put some of these resource links into our show notes for the end of the podcast, for the episode, and that way people can find those resources and click on them and be directed appropriately. And I know we've really concentrated today mainly on this, the higher level sort of idea of patient partner involvement and what we can do. But I wonder whether you would be willing to come back on a future episode, perhaps later in the season, to talk a little bit about some of the quality improvement projects themselves you've been involved in from the patient partner perspective. Would you be willing to do that?
I would love that. And if you're ever looking for other patient partners that have done great projects with other healthcare groups, I right off the top of my head, I know some of them, and I would love to eventually maybe see them on this podcast.
Well, that's great. Thank you for that. And we'll definitely take you up on that. But unfortunately, we've run out of time today, and I can hear the closing music, which means we have to wrap things up. We'll put those resources on our show notes. It just remains for me to thank you, Kim, for coming on and joining us today. And as always, we'll be sending you one of our exclusive and highly coveted QualityCast North coffee mugs as a token of our appreciation. So until next time, I'm your host, Cher Chewy.
And I'm Lee Cameron.
And you've been listening to QualityCast North. If you enjoyed today's episode, check out our other episodes on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you find your podcasts, and subscribe to our channel. We'd love to hear from you. If you have a question for us about healthcare quality improvement, email us at qualitycomms@northernhealth.ca, and your question could feature on a future episode. QualityCast North is sponsored by the Physician Quality Improvement Initiative, or PQI. PQI is a flagship program of the Specialist Services Committee, a collaboration between the Provincial Ministry of Health and the Doctors of BC, with representation from the provincial health authorities. This episode was co-produced by Dr. Cher Chewy and Lee Cameron, with technical support from Matt Walker and Lee Val-Giles, and original music by Daniel Chewy. Further information about today's guest is available in our show notes and on our website at nhpqi.ca.